and I declare the winner of the 2019 Brownlow Medal, Nathan Fife of the Fremantle Football Club.
Shade from the mound. Needs to be in perfect.
Hello all, welcome back to another episode of the Centre Square podcast. Great to have your company wherever you're listening, either on your device or Sport FM 91.3 radio. My name is Noah Tonkin, and joining me, hopefully for our last time over the phone before we can get back in the studio, is Ethan Roth. Ethan, how are you and how did you react to the news a few hours ago of the June 11 restart date?
Yeah, pleasure to be here, just the two of us today. So, yeah, we'll be good. And the news just dropped a few hours ago that footy will be back. So it's very exciting. And, you know, we'll be counting down the days to that June 11 restart date. Absolutely. So the guests are always big, but this man doesn't really need an introduction. We'll list his career highlights anyway. So joining us, pick 41 in the 2000 National Draft. 102 games for Richmond, 35 for Collingwood, for a total of 137 games with 152 goals over a 13-year period. He won the 2010 Sandover and Simpson medals in that Swan Districts Premiership side, also winning the 2011 AFL Mark of the Year and was in the Collingwood Grand Final team that season as well. He is one of the most unique and inspiring footy stories. It's Andrew Cracker. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Cheers, Noah and Ethan. Thank you very much for having me on.
No problem.
Yeah, so we'll get straight into it. Can you tell us about your early life growing up and what impact did your father, Jim, and Uncle Phil had on you? And being a young Indigenous boy as well as your dad being in prison, how did that change your life at the age of 11?
I think I didn't realise what sort of football figures Uncle Phil and Dad were when I was growing up. We grew up in Melbourne. I was born over here and spent early stages of my life over here until I was 10 years old. So probably the earliest memories of Dad with footy I remember is actually going to the creche when Dad was going to North Melbourne. So I didn't really see him play, unfortunately. I was a bit too young. But then when Dad was at St Kilda, I remember getting down there a little bit. Gilbert McAdam, Russell Jeffries, Nicky Winmar were down there. And also a big plug of Lockett. So I remember there's a photo, I think, of Plugger myself. I've probably got more memories of Dan at Moorabbin than when Dad was at North Melbourne. But growing up, obviously, as I said, we were in WA. And then when Dad got into a bit of trouble, we moved over to WA. And I was about 11 years old then. So, yeah, it was quite hard, I suppose, with having your father incarcerated, trying to be a young man. Becoming a teenage boy and trying to turn into a man. So not having Dad around was quite difficult. But, Mum was amazing with what she did. She held the family together and, did the best with what she could. So in the situation she was presented with. So I'll give full credit to Mum with what she was been able to do. She had to raise my younger brother, Tyron, as well, and my two older sisters. So it was a little bit all over the shop. We weren't sort of as stable as we would have liked to be, but considering the situation, mum did quite well. And through those teenage years, I suppose, footy, I did play a little bit of footy, through, obviously, when I was a young tacker, and then when we moved over to WA also, again. So it was just something I enjoyed doing, I suppose, and all my mates were doing it as well, and I wasn't too bad at it. So, I really never really had ambitions to play AFL footy at that stage. It was just more playing something because you enjoyed it and, all your friends are doing it as well.
Yeah, of course. Could you talk us through getting drafted to Richmond and what memories you have from the Tigers in the early 2000s, both personally and from a team's perspective?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a shock. My preparation leading up to the 2000 draft wasn't wasn't what I would have wanted it to be. Hopefully going through all those state systems and playing some state footy and Colts footy and then flanking the next step to play AFL footy. I had my first daughter when I was 16, so I didn't really want to play footy at that stage. I remember playing it, like I said before, because I enjoyed it, but we're good. So leading up to it, as I said, you know, I was playing a little bit of Colts footy and then also going to the Clontarf Football Academy. And Jared Neesham was the coach there. So with his football contacts and networks, he, you know, sort of as the season went on, said there might be a little bit of interest. And obviously, I didn't think too much of it, obviously having my daughter in 1999. So I was thinking I wanted to, you know, have to get a job and sort of, you know, get a career. And I didn't think and realise that footy would have been a career until Jared mentioned it to me. So I nominated for the draft and, yeah, so, and then after, you know, playing some all right school footy, a couple of all right games at Colts, I was lucky enough to get my name called out by Richmond in the 2000 draft. So, as I've sort of always said, it took me a couple of years, I reckon, to get my head around what was required at AFL level, training-wise, on-field and off-field. But I had some good people. Wayne Campbell was really good, and, you know, Leon Cameron, the coach of GWS right now, they were some good mentors and helped me out with sort of what was required. You know, I had a little bit of trouble with my skin folds and diet and, you know, eating and early on. But once I probably understood that, it probably took me a couple of years and obviously with my body to be able to hold up to AFL standard training as well. I remember having a bit of dramas with some shin splints early and just, I think, not being able to cope with the workload. But once I was able to do that for a couple of years, I think it was about my third year, I was able to consolidate my spot on the side and be a regular regular AFL player and been able to make an impact. So Danny Fawley was great. He's my first coach and he was great with being able to give me the opportunity and also, I suppose, give me the belief that I was able to play AFL footy as well. So and did the hard work that I put in to make sure that I was, you know, putting my hand up to play, not just to make up the numbers, but being able to sort of go out and perform on a consistent level.
Yeah, so everything's going great. You just kicked over the 100 game mark, and then the assault in 2006 comes. So, can you tell us what you remember from that night and what the initial feeling was when you were taken into prison when that door closes behind you, left to be so isolated?
Yeah, obviously, it's sort of been well documented. I got myself in a little bit of strife, and obviously, things turned out, and I'm fully accountable for my actions and, you know, what happened that night. There's no other if, buts or maybes around it. I made a terrible decision, and I paid a very harsh consequence for that. So I think the next day probably obviously a lot of guilt, anxiety, and sort of the unknown, just not knowing what was going to happen. But then probably, you know, really sunk in that I did something, you know, really bad, and I was kind of, as I said, going to pay a very harsh penalty for that. So you know, probably the next year. So it's over that Christmas period in 2006 was a bit of a blur, and also the sort of the 2007 season when I went back training and back playing for the Richmond Tigers. So that was really tough to deal with. But you know, as I said before, you know, it's something I had to deal with, and you know, I only had myself to blame. But it's sort of fast forwarding a little bit, as you said, sort of when I've first went inside, it was a little bit of a surreal feeling, I suppose. You know, you're thinking one day you run around on the MCG playing AFL footy, and then all of a sudden you've had your freedom taken away from you because of a decision you chose to make. And that first night was, you know, was pretty scary, I suppose. My brother, he was locked up with me as well, and I remember walking down the hallway with him, and someone yelled out Torrens name, and it was a guy we went to school with, and I think, you know, the big door, as we got, just came to our cell and the sort of the door closed and it clunks, it's a pretty scary feeling, and that's sort of when, you know, really kicked in that this is really happening, this is going to be home for the next at least 16 months.
Yeah. Did you do anything to remain positive in prison? And did you imagine that you would get back to playing in the AFL?
Certainly no. I didn't think I'd get back to playing footy. I didn't, you know, footy wasn't an ambition and wasn't something I really wanted to do. I think, AFL anyway. So I obviously, Swan Districts, they are really good. And Brian Dawson, the coach, and Brendan Parker, they came out to see me a couple of times while I was at Warraloo. At the Warraloo facility, and they were really positive for me to be able to get back come back and play for the Swan District Footy Club. So I said I wanted to because, you know, the club showed a lot of faith in me and, you know, they signed me up even before I went away and got locked up, and knowing there was a possibility of me going to jail, they still wanted to sign me up and said they'd cross that bridge when they got there. So for them to have that faith in me, I just wanted to come out and, you know, just play footy for them. But and that's, yeah, that's what was sort of my mindset. And I think I was, another thing that I took out of sort of having a lot of time on my hands was controlling what you could. It was an old philosophy we learned in a and my Richmond days. And, you know, I couldn't control, you know, the time I was incarcerated for, the situation, the other things that were going on around me. But I could really control my mindset and sort of how I went about things each day. So I try to train as much as I could. That'd be, you know, playing basketball, footy, cricket, running, weights, boxing. So just whatever sports was going on in there at the time, I played so that took my mind off things most times. But then obviously I still had a fair bit of downtime. So I just try to keep positive and be around some guys in there that made me laugh a bit and try to take my mind off things. So that's how I really passed my time whilst I was incarcerated.
Yeah, and when did you realise that you never wanted to be back there again? You mentioned about Swan Districts, but can you tell us about how the whole process of Swan Districts came about?
Yeah, coming back when I never wanted to be there again is probably the first time I went to court. So, and obviously really sunk in when you're going in there and you're getting processed and, you know, you're going to walk to your cell. So, you know, I swore to myself that I'd never make a mistake and like that again. But then I look on as well, I was out of my daughter's lives for, you know, 16 months due to my actions and a choice I decided to make. So I was never going to put that in jeopardy again to be away from my family and to be able to make a terrible decision like that again. So that was pretty early in the piece. And sorry, what was the second part of that question? The Swan Districts?
So, yeah, like you mentioned about the process. So how did they, come see you, and how did that come about with you eventually signing with them?
Yeah, so as I said, Brian Dawson and Brendan Parker, they remained in contact with me and came out and saw me a couple of times and just reiterated that, you know, just obviously check on my well-being and how I was going and how my family was and if there was anything they could do to support. And just said, yeah, once, you know, we're still really keen to get you down once you get out. So, Dawson Parks, you know, they're really good and they really wanted me to get back down there. So that gave me something else to look forward to as well. Upon, you know, sort of me getting out and I had a bit of a prison employment program that I was involved in Swan District. So, you know, probably about a couple of months before I got out, I was able to go down to the footy club. So they were really good and helped me with that transition to sort of re-socialise, back into society. So it was a really easy and smooth transition. And, you know, I got out in October 2009 and then pretty much walked straight into pre-season. So I was pretty fit at that stage. But I remember, I think it was one of the first training sessions. It was at the end of the training session and Brian Dawson said, you know, I just want to welcome someone back, and he said they, you know, welcome Andy Cracker back. It's good to have you back here, mate. And I was a little bit sheepish before that, obviously understanding with I've just got out of jail and didn't know how the group would take me in. And you know, they gave a bit of a clap, and I just felt a big big weight off my shoulders and a big relief that the club was where I wanted to be. I was around some really good people that had my best interest at heart, and they were going to support me as much as I could. So, you know, at that stage, I just wanted to do everything I could to play, play and have the best season I could to repay the faith that the footy club had in me.
Yeah. So when you did return for that 2010 season, it was the best individual season in Waffle history. You won the Sandover and Simpson Medal. But before you get into that grand final as well, did you almost find it easy running out every week? And did you expect to be so dominant?
No, not at all, mate. That was certainly not the case. I remember the first game. I think through the preseason, I did all right in our preseason games, and so we did well. We won a few games there, and obviously pre-season form, you know, doesn't count for too much once the real stuff starts. But our first game, I played pretty poorly against West Perth, and I started to probably doubt myself a little bit. And I remember speaking to my mum and my partner, and you know, I was thinking, did I make the right decision to be able to come back and play footy, or should I pull the pin because I didn't play too well? And I had all these thoughts running through my head that I should give it up. And mum and my partner were pretty positive and just said, just remain positive. It's you know, it's only one game. You can play next week. But unfortunately, we had a bye the next week, so it seemed like eternity to wait for round three. But you know, I had all those feelings, and then got my head around it that, yep, nah, they're right. It's only 1 week. I'll get back to training, train well, and prepare to play well the next week. And obviously, as I said, we had a bye, and then we played South Fremantle in round three, and I had an all right game. And then from that point on, the year went all right for me, and I was able to play some pretty consistent footy.
Yeah. So speaking of that famous premiership 10 years ago, you recorded the highest ever ranking points in that game of 290, coming off 42 disposals, 4 goals, and kicking that match-winning goal at the end. What can you remember from that day? How hard did you party or celebrate? And is there any plans for a 10-year reunion?
A gentleman never tells, my friend, so I can't tell you how hard I celebrated.
fair enough.
But nah, I went all right. I wasn't too bad. I probably got a podium finish on the after party as well. So, I've just got some great recollections of that day. I remember sort of going to the ground. It was a beautiful day for footy. You know, as a team, we were very confident, even despite us, you know, losing to Claremont 2 weeks prior by about 81 points in the qualifying final. So, then we won the prelim against East Perth and gave ourselves another opportunity. But just as that day, I remember it being a beautiful day, a lot of confidence. Some great memories. You sort of, you know, you saw a young kid by the name of Stevie Coniglio. He's now, he was unearthed. He kicked 4 goals and had 17 possessions as a 16-year-old. And, you know, he's now captain of the AFL Giants in the AFL. So that's just an absolute credit to himself with what he's been able to do. And, you know, with his preparation and what he is as a player, he's a pure leader. We saw at that young age at that grand final in 2010, that's certainly what he was. And, you know, that's great, been great to see his progress, you know, over the past 10 years. But then you sort of look back on it and, you know, I sort of think of my teammates, you know, you've got Josh Roberts, the captain, Talon Ames down back, Justin Simpson's the Basso boy, you've got Graham Jetta down there. You know, we had some recruits come over from East there for a couple of years, Wade Toomey, Brent Robertson, Timmy Geepen. So we had some outstanding players. Ashley Hansen came through. He was on the Eagles list at that time, but how he came back and adapted himself to sort of how we wanted to play and his attitude to buy in with the group was absolutely outstanding. And he played some amazing footy as well that year when he came back. And we just had an amazing team and had amazing confidence. It's early on in the game we didn't kick too straight. I remember kicking, I think, about 3 points in the first quarter. Ash didn't kick too straight. So our kicking, you know, Claremont were a really dangerous side and they could have really put us way early, but we were able to sort of hold on and just keep pressuring them up. And, you know, it was an arm wrestle the whole game. But, just absolute joy. I remember, you know, even the last couple of minutes, I remember people talking about me being on the mark, I think, with just after David Crawford kicked his goal. So, obviously, he kicked Claremont's goal and then they put him 5 points in front with a couple of minutes left. And I remember I was thinking that he might have... I was trying to crumb that ball, but obviously marked it. And obviously thinking, looking at the time, thinking there's not long left. We could have just lost the grand final. So, we went back to the centre square and I remember, I think it was Graham Jetta who came off... there was a bit of a collision, and so he got off. So there's a little bit of time on, and it was a longer quarter. So I was remember thinking that, you know, there could be a possibility we could get another crack at it. And it went back into our forward 50. A free kick was awarded to David again, and I think just in that stoppage of play, I started to cramp up just before that. And I was on Kane Mitchell at the time, and I remember Kane straight away taking off when the free kick was given to Crawford, and I just couldn't run with him, and because I started to cramp up, and then obviously I thought to myself, I'm going to take the mark here. I'm going to get someone to go and run with Kane, with a possibility. I'm thinking if we can turn the footy over, I'm gonna be able to beat Crawford back, and possibly have a shot at goal. So it was a massive roll of the dice. At a really integral part of the game, really important part of the game. So sometimes, you know, you wouldn't, you know, live by the sword, die by the sword, I suppose. And I was lucky enough that, you know, he shanked it. And there was I think it was Stevie Knigg there, Tommy Roach and Wade Toomey were linked up again. A bit. They got the ball inside 50 and I was able to get the crumb off the pack. And, you know, for my sake and the Swan District's footy club, I was able to kick it going. Put us 1 point up that, and we eventually won the grand final.
Yeah. Now it was pretty well documented that you were a reasonable chance to get a second crack at the top level. We believe Gold Coast were pretty keen to recruit you, but could you tell us what your first initial thoughts and reaction was when you got the news about Collingwood drafting you or picking you back up again?
Yeah, sure. And sorry, just before I just sort of move on to that, it's sort of the recollections as well for the Swan Districts as to how much it meant to a lot of people. I remember even Indy, our trainer, the bloke who gave out our jumpers every training session, I remember giving them guys a hug afterwards and seeing their emotion on their face, and the trainers and people who'd been involved for the Swan District Footy Club for a long period of time, and how much it meant. I was only involved for the club for 1 and a bit years, but you could see how much it meant to them, and to be able to help give those people joy and a memory that is going to last a lifetime was something I look back on very, very fondly. So blokes like Indy and all the stalwarts of the footy club, it was great to be able to give them some success for reward for all the hard work that they put in. And going on to the second question, I remember having a chat with Collingwood probably halfway through the season, and with Derek Hine, he was just sort of a bit of a general chit chat to whether I'd like to come back to Melbourne. What do I think about it? That chat went all right, and then the second time I had a chat with him was after the grand final. The Waffle Grand Final, and I was actually going to go over to the Grand Final, but unfortunately I couldn't because of my parole. So I think that they had the Grand Final, and the drawn Grand Final I was going to go over, but I couldn't because of my parole conditions. But they basically spoke to me a couple of weeks after that, and basically said, if you'd like to come over, we'd really love to have you. Obviously, I was pre-listed by the Gold Coast. There's a few trades there, which I'm sort of not privy to didn't understand what happened. But as soon as you said that, I said, yep, no worries. I'd love to come over. So I spoke to my partner and said, looks like we're going back over to Melbourne. So, and also I had a great mate, Leon Davis, who was at Collingwood at the time. And I really, really wanted to play some footy at the top level with him as well.
Yeah, so talk us about that memorable 2011 season. Were you surprised how you were able to fit into a side who had just won the flag the year before, and how special was it to be part of that, kicking 35 goals in a side that won the minor premiership, as well as getting the nickname of the Foot County Specialist?
Yeah, the nickname's not too bad. I've got a few mates that call me that once they have a few bevvies, so that's not too bad. But I was sort of shocked in a way that this team's just won the AFL the premiership, and I'm here, and then I've been able to play good enough footy and prepare myself well enough to be able to get an opportunity to come in and play a role in this side. So it's looking back on it now, it was I had to sort of pinch myself at the time, but I couldn't really worry about that. I just had to understand that my opportunity was there and I was ready. And I knew that I could make an impact straight away once I got the opportunity. So I was just trying to make the most of every opportunity I had. Obviously, throughout the year, we had a pretty good year, consistent year. We played some really good footy. We were minor premiers, but so that really meant nothing once once the final started. And unfortunately, we got to the last day in September against Geelong, and we played some really good footy, but unfortunately not consistent over four quarters, and that's where the Geelong Cats got us. They played some, I think, in the last, going into the last quarter, three quarter time, we were down only by a couple of goals, I think, and we were pretty confident because we were the, you know, throughout the year we were the best finishing side in the comp. But the Cats were just too good that day, and they'll crown 2011 premiers.
You seem to be having a lot of fun week in, week out, becoming a fan favourite. Could you talk us through that mark against Adelaide? I believe it won Mark of the Year in Indigenous round. Do you rate it as your best mark of all time?
No, I actually took a better one, but that wasn't captured, so people say it didn't happen. But it was. I've had a few mates who was there, but I did take one that was a lot better than that. So that was crowned. Mark of the Year. I think Andy Walker was a bit stiff that he never got Mark of the Year, but probably comes down to who was liked the most that year, and I think I got the chalkies. So, unfortunately for Walks, his mark was better, but he didn't get the vote, so unfortunately, bad luck, Walks. But his was an absolute screamer. He took an amazing mark, and yeah, he was very, very stiff, the boy. I absolutely loved playing in front of the Collingwood faithful. They were very vocal. They welcomed me in from day one. They really got around me when I played my footy, once I was able to meet the members and supporters. So I really, really enjoyed my time, most of the time playing at the MCG in front of the Collingwood supporters.
Yeah, so you made the grand final that year, as you touched on before, against Geelong, who were looking for their third flag in 5 years. You were one of the Pies' best players on that day with 3 goals, and you mentioned before you were right in it with them up until three-quarter time. Do you think it was just a case of running out of legs and having tasted success a year prior, although it was at a different level? How long did it take you to get over the disappointment and start to focus on 2012?
You look back on it, you just got to – the team was – Collingwood had just – I don't know if we ran out of legs. It was just that Geelong played the better footy, and at the end of the day, you can't take anything away from them. You've got to give them full credit with what they were able to do. They were consistent over 4 quarters, and as I said, they played the better game, and they were deserved winners of the AFL Premiership in 2011. So we can't take anything away from them. They were an outstanding footy team when it counted, and they played their best footy when it mattered the most. So it's full credit to them. But what was your second part of that question, bud?
Just how hard was it to get over the disappointment and start to focus on 2012 next season?
Obviously, it stung a fair bit. Obviously, losing the granny. You put so much work and effort towards, playing and winning a grand final. So to be able to get there and get so close and then lose it, it was a pretty sad feeling, you let it sink in, you process it, and you try to use it for a little motivation for the next year. So we had the off season as well. So it probably, for a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months. But then once you got to train, you got to try to get yourself up and about again to be able to go into the next season. So personally, I didn't sort of dwell on it for too long because it was done and dusted. And no matter how much I thought about it, the result couldn't change.
Yeah. So the end of 2013 comes. Unfortunately, you were delisted after being in and out of the side. Do you agree with this, or do you sort of think you were ready to move on? And could you tell us a bit about your time at West Perth in 2014?
Yeah, I think it was probably the writing was on the wall. I was it was a bit of inconsistent footy. I wasn't really surprised with the decision that I was being delisted, but all good things come to an end, and you just got to be able to deal with the situation. So I got the call and obviously went in and got delisted, and then you move on and you sort of look for the next opportunity with what you're going to do, whether you try to put yourself in the draft again or go back home, which was my case, and play. I got picked up by West Perth. So I went back to West Perth, and they were great with me. I went back there, and I really wanted to try and play some good footy for them as well. But I think my time at West Perth, I felt sort of run down, and not because of West Perth, but I think just with all my journey over the last 3 or 4 years, or 5 years, I suppose. And I think with all the all the meetings and opposition analysis and things like that. I think I was a little bit over it, and you know, it was semi-professional, and I just sort of felt that my time, you know, I think halfway through the season with West Perth, that that's sort of not really what I wanted to do anymore. I wonder if I was going to play footy, I just wanted to play with some mates and play for a bit of fun and just relax and not be so, you know, semi-professional about it. So, unfortunately, you know, I didn't play out the year with West Perth, and I went back to play with some mates in Bassendean. West Perth was, you know, great to be able to give me a clearance to be able to go and do that, and they understood that, which I'm very grateful for. And, yeah, went back and played with some mates at Basso and in the C2 league, and were able to win a flag, which was really good to win it with some mates. So I really enjoyed that as well.
Yeah, and last one before the Q&A is, can you give us an insight on what you're doing now with the work? You've obviously been on the Mark Footy Show regularly, as well as Fox Footy's On The Mark last year. How much are you trying to spread your message also with the Andrew Cracker speaker initiative?
Yeah, I also do a little bit of public speaking. So obviously it may be target different audiences as well. So it could be, I've spoken to the Melbourne Rebels rugby club. So it's they're pretty similar, which are in the rugby union. They're pretty similar to like sort of AFL, I suppose, and understanding the opportunities of what you have and sort of maybe some challenges that you face throughout your career and how to possibly overcome them and put yourself in a positive mindset and be able to push on through. So, and it also could be sort of some, you know, some younger kids maybe wanting to get into the AFL system or take that next step. And so it's been a number of different audiences, even some, you know, board members of football clubs. So, and maybe just to share my story, they want to hear something different. So it's been really good. I've been able to get an opportunity to do that. And I've really enjoyed being able to tell my story and the response that I've been able to get from some people. Speaking afterwards, I've spoken, they pulled me aside, and one thing that I've said really hit home for them, and they spoke about that and said, oh, well, I really appreciate you saying that, because that's sort of what's happening with me at the moment, or that's what's happened, and I'll, you know, with understanding how you went through it and how you worked through it, I, you know, I really that really inspired me and motivated me to be able to do something. So when I hear people say that, it just reiterates that I'm on the right path, and with me being able to share my story, and that I'm doing the right thing, and it feels really good to be able to give back. So I'm really enjoying doing that. Unfortunately, with our ISO restrictions at the moment, I can't be able to do that too much. You know, I've been doing a couple of podcasts and speaking to a few guys like yourself, and I've been able to sort of spread the message and just have a bit of a general chat. But that's what I've been doing since I've been back in Melbourne. We've also got a show called Colour of Your Jumper. It comes out on the AFL website. Myself, Matty Stokes from Geelong, and Shelley Ware, we do that as well. So I think that might be coming up and coming back up and running again now that the season's going to start on June the 11th. So, and also doing some special comments for NIRS, which is National Indigenous Radio Service, on AFL games as well, which I really enjoyed. So other than that, so the main thing that I've been doing is working in the construction industry with Multiplex. So I'm in there at the moment, and luckily still have my job and able to go to work. So that's been really good, and I'm enjoying that. But other than that, mate, I've just been spending a lot of time with the family and just taking it easy, and hopefully get out and get over this period of this ISO and this COVID pandemic that we've all been struggling with.
Yeah, so we'll get into the Q&A. So thanks to everyone that sent them in. This one's from Guts_Armstrong. How important was Mick Malthouse for you, and was there any nerves or anxiety returning to the AFL?
Mick was amazing, as I said, with the belief, I suppose, he gave me to understand that he's actually said to me, you know, you're not coming over here to make up the numbers. You're here to play. I'm bringing you over here to play in the side, so just get your head around that. So I think that belief that he gave me was amazing, and it really gave me the confidence to be able to, you know that I'm coming over here and I'm going to be able to get every opportunity to fit in, and every opportunity to play inside, play for this great footy club. So it was awesome, and all the chats we had, you know, it was just about family and whatever else. It wasn't really about footy. So I think the care factor and empathy he had towards his players, especially me, I really, really am thankful for.
Yeah, I saw you defended him during the week as well, which thought was
good. Yeah, absolutely. And what was the second part of that question, mate?
Oh, no, that was it. I was just saying, you know, about how you defended Ming Mulhouse during the week. And
I don't know, I just thought I'd put something up because, you know, I think what the comment that David said was, you know, was out of line. And, you know, Mick certainly not, you know, nothing like that. And he's, you know, Leon Davis would be able to attest to it as well with the, you know, the Indigenous boys with how much empathy and care that he has for them. And I could only speak on my behalf. But, I just felt like I just felt like sticking up for him. And, yeah, what Kochi was said was wrong.
Yeah. Next question it's the same question from two people at the Garden of Eden and at CFC_1892. If you could give one piece of life or footy advice, what would it be?
I think that you know, when you're in sort of a tough spot and things aren't going too well for you, to try to remain positive. I know it's an old cliche and it's easier said than done, but I think to be able to control only what you can control would be a good bit of advice, because when we're in a negative situation or things aren't going too well, we tend to worry about, you know, what's not going good or, you know, things we can't control. So I think to be able to, you know, with your mindset and how you go about things each day and understand that, yes, feelings and emotions are normal. It's normal to feel in a certain way, but to try not to attach yourself to that feeling to make you feel down and to a point where you want to act on those emotions. So just, you know, let them come through, I suppose. And no matter how things are, you know, the wheel does turn. And I suppose I'm perfect example of that. One year I'm in prison with, you know, sort of not having a bright future and not having much to look forward to. And you fast forward to 1 year later, I'm a premiership player for the Swan Districts Footy Club, standover medalist, Simpson medalist, and then fast forward another year after that, I'm playing on an AFL grand final. So I suppose with a positive mindset, great support and great network of people around you, you know, anything can happen. And I suppose that's a bit of advice I can, you know, give to anyone.
Yeah. This one comes from Zach Martin_. Who did you grow up barracking?
I actually grew up barracking for North Melbourne, because Dad and Uncle Phil. I was a big Wayne Carey fan as well, and Winston Abraham. So the Roos were my side when I was a young fella.
Yeah, nice. Next one from Southside_spec. Did you get leather poisoning in that 2010 grand final? And why do they call you the meat axe?
Oh, my goodness, no. I'm not going to answer that one.
One of your mates, I'm assuming.
Yes, I may know him, yes.
What about the leather poisoning in that 2010?
I was lucky enough to, as I said, get a few touches and kick a few goals. So, I had an all right day there.
Yeah. This one's from Lachlan_TZ and Jack Bradshaw. Same question. Highlight of your AFL career or best moment?
Through my whole career as in football, the Swan Districts 2010 Premiership, and on my AFL would probably be to play in the AFL Grand Final. So I know there's two there, but at different parts of the as a whole, and then during the AFL.
Yeah, and something that's just come to my mind, in that, I think it was round 3, 2011, you did that celebration, which did get a bit of controversy at the time. So can you tell us about that? And also, was racism as well something you copped or had to deal with as a player?
No, I'm very thankful that, you know, the AFL put a lot of things and systems in place to be able to, you know, educate players. Obviously, there's still a little bit out there, sort of, obviously, there's a lot out in society, but, and there's a little bit, you know, that has been publicised in the AFL, but I was lucky enough that I didn't have any directed at me. So, the AFL, obviously, when my dad started playing, they've come along in leaps and bounds to be able to support Indigenous players and players from different backgrounds and, you know, a whole diverse of different cultures. So, No, they've been really good in that. But with that goal celebration, obviously, yeah, as you said, it did get a lot of controversy, and then people were saying that I was glorifying criminality, and how could I do something like that on a national stage? But the reason why I did it was, you know, not what everyone thought. It was to give a little bit of hope and support to my brother, who was incarcerated at the time. He was inside, and he just wanted me to give him a little sign. And by me doing that, you know, people said that, as I said, I was glorifying criminality, and that, you know, getting in trouble and all that kind of stuff, which couldn't be further from the truth. It was a sign of hope and support that, you know, no matter where you are and what you're going through, things can change. And you know, especially the boys that are in the prison system, or you know, that, you know, you could be out here running around on the MCG one day. And you know, Marlon Pickett, I think he was in jail at that time, I think, or around that time. And you know, you fast forward, you know, 10 years later, he's a premiership player, and he's playing with the Richmond Tigers. So my message was to blokes like that, you know, to be able to stay positive and keep plugging away with what you want to do, and you never know what could happen, the opportunity that you could make. So that was the sign that I was giving, and that was the reason behind it.
Yeah, of course. Back onto the Q&As. Next one's from at Matty Risto _11. Which was the better club for you, Richmond or Collingwood?
Oh, I think you play footy to win, and you want to be successful. So I think Collingwood were a lot successful than my time at Richmond. Obviously, Richmond, you know, they gave me my first opportunity, but I think just with it, you know, it's successful. Obviously, the Tigers are successful at the moment, but during my time, I think, yeah, just being a little bit more successful was a little bit more enjoyable playing, winning most games than not. So, unfortunately, we had a bit of a rough patch when I was at the Tigers, but still love my time at both footy clubs.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because you did play 100 games for Richmond and 30-odd for Collingwood, but I suppose people would remember you most from Collingwood. So, did you get, like, notice much around, like, in the streets of Melbourne or when you're out in public?
Oh, yeah, a little bit. Obviously, Melbourne's a diehard footy city, so everyone loves their footy. Footy's like a culture over here, so yeah, I do get that a little bit. But yeah, but like you said, most people do remember me from my days at Collingwood.
Yeah, and last Q&A is from Hot Pies Army. Things you've done, I suppose, to keep entertained or learn to appreciate during this isolation time?
I think just the little things, you know, obviously family time, and, you know, just to be able to do the simple things, I suppose, to go out and play in the park and go to a movie, go and have dine out somewhere. I think just those little things, and going out, catching up with friends. I think a lot of people are going to have a different perspective on that once they're able to, you know, go and catch up with people, even a handshake or a hug and things like that. You wouldn't realise that you miss that. But, you know, once you see your mates and that's how you usually embrace them, and then you can't usually do a fist bump, or you got to touch elbows, or, you know, can't touch at all. So I think just even little things like that, you're going to appreciate. They're just the small things. But I think, you know, along with myself, you know, a lot of people are going to appreciate those little things a lot more.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, that brings an end to all we have in store for today. But thanks to Ethan for making it possible. Is there anything you want to finish off on, Ethan?
No, not really. It was a really good episode. And, yeah, looking forward to hopefully getting back in the studio next week or in the weeks to come. But, yeah, massive thanks to Andrew Cracker for giving up his time to take our call and, I suppose, opening up on his journey. Yeah, you're champion both on and off the field, and we wish you all the best with everything,
Ethan,
in the future.
And Noah, thank you very much for having me on the show, gents. As yous do, I wish... hoping you get back in the studio sooner rather later, and I'll be following and subscribing to your podcast and listening closely. So thank you very much for having me on, gents.
No, thank you.
No, thanks.
Last but not least, follow us on Instagram, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube at Centre Square Podcast, and we'll continue to give you updates as we look forward to hopefully being back in the studio once this is all done. Thanks, guys.